Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Thank you so much for waking up on your Sunday morning. I know some of you could be getting up really, really early. I really appreciate it. For those East and Central time, thanks again for joining us at 8 and 9, and then, of course, Mountain at 7, and then 6 for the West. So thank you so much for being here. And, of course, those who are down under, I know we have several of those on here. And even those in Europe, thank you so much for joining us. I don't say that enough, I don't think, how much I appreciate the audience and how much I appreciate the mods and the team. We couldn't have any shows without y'all, so I really appreciate it. We're going to dive right into Nancy Guthrie. Nancy Guthrie, of course, went missing on February 1st in the Catalina foothills in Arizona. And some of you might be saying, well, is there new information? Is there new case developments? To me, the newest case developments that we know about that have been made public to us were made public to us by Savannah Guthrie in her interview. It was a very emotional interview. I think it was a very honest and raw video. And clearly, it wasn't anything that I don't believe to be scripted in some of the things she said. I've gone over that really extensively the day it came out. I did a show at noon at the last minute, literally. I just went on and started the show. So I know many of you missed it. I hope that some of you might go back and look at that show. It was at noon. So that's the time on the YouTube, the day that the first videos came out. And so I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but I keep having a lot of people ask me about those epiphanies. So while I won't go through them exactly one by one, certainly going to touch on them a little bit throughout this, because I think some of those have possibly definitely gives us light on things. But also, you know, some of the things released, I don't think were a good idea. And I'm going to explain why. I actually have a pretty, I don't want to say long show planned, but a lot of things to get unpacked here as we talk about Nancy. Believe it or not, I still get so many questions, and I think it's good to always unpack a lot of this information that is out there. So let me start with this. There's some people in the news talking about secondary locations. So I want to express what that exactly means. A secondary location, I know it seems self-explanatory, but in law enforcement talk, we're specifically talking about, and to me, I wouldn't say secondary, I'd say secondary, I would say tertiary, I would say all the other locations that were involved in the pre-planning and post disposition of this crime they committed. So a lot of people are, I think, talking about like the second location. I think we really need to lump in the totality of the location. So essentially, there's a place where at least Porch Guy, and let me put his face up here because he's the one that really matters. Sorry, we're going to talk about that. So the first location that to me is so important on each of the days, on the 11th, as well as the day of this crime, are the locations that might have been used by this individual to prep, to prepare. So specifically, we know that he had to get there on the 11th and on the morning of the 1st. And actually, law enforcement, remember, has said the night of the 31st is also important. Remember, that was also mentioned by, I shouldn't say law enforcement, specifically mentioned by Savannah. Three dates, the 11th, the 31st of January, and the 1st of February. We know the 1st of February is talking about that window in the morning that obviously this horrible crime occurred. We know definitely 147 camera is ripped from the porch. We know at 2:12, a figure is seen by one of the other, Nancy's other cameras. Let me show you where at least one I think I have on here where this one was positioned. Oh, no, it's not there. All right. Thought I could do it without my glasses, but that is how blind I am. Might not have put this picture up. Nope, I did not put that picture up. But basically, there were cameras that were on the roof of Nancy's house. And those cameras were discovered, if you will, by law enforcement many days later. They went back. So the first search occurred on the 1st of February. There's Sheriff Nano specifically said he searched 20 hours. There's a lot of reporting now that they may have only searched a couple of hours. So, you know, he's got some teed off people in his department that are coming forward. And, you know, I've often said with the source information, why are these sources doing this? It's becoming really quite clear, right? I think source information that is coming forward is really coming forward to Deep Six Sheriff Nanos at any cost. And so they're bringing a lot of this information that is so detrimental and harmful to the case, although it may be truthful. As an example, if this is true, that they only spent a couple hours there, that's a true tragedy for this case. We know from Savannah there were all sorts of people in there roaming in and out. So the crime scene is trash. And then if they spent that short amount of time, I mean, how many hours were from the moment that Annie and Tommy, which is what he apparently likes to be called, how many hours were they there? They first went there. I had the exact time. I believe it was, let's see, I think I have the exact time. Well, the exact time was right around 11 something, after 11 and before noon. So essentially they, between that time frame and the time frame police came and the time frame that Savannah came and saw all these people, I mean, the crime scene was ruined, unfortunately, or let's say not completely ruined, but certainly adulterated, kind of like in the JonBenet Ramsey case. So this is a serious issue. And then now people coming forward and saying he was only in there 2 hours, 2.5 hours, the crime scene crew. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what's being put out there. This is fodder for, absolute fodder for the defense whenever somebody is taken into custody. And I want to thank you, Hill Days. Thank you so much for joining the channel. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate this, joining the channel, and now a chat from Danielle Dianelli. Thank you so much. There is so much that is problematic about the case, but now that more and more of these details are coming out, and I'm going to have Josh Schiff on hopefully Tuesday morning. That's my plan, Josh Schiff, Tuesday morning to discuss this, the issues. And remember, he's super funny and super entertaining. I always like to have him on to get kind of a lighter side when these cases are so, so heavy. He takes them seriously. I love him because he's a practicing attorney. I've talked a lot about this. that it's very important on this show that I have on people that have done the job. I've cautioned everybody to look at some of these talking heads that are speaking about this and what their breadth of knowledge is. Did they really work crime? How long did they work? Were they there and gone in months? All of that is really important when you all are deciding the information you're going to consume and what you're going to take into account concerning what a person might say. Thank you so much, Carpe Diem. I appreciate you becoming a member, and Carpe Diem, I love that saying. That's something I say every single morning. Well, I thank God for the day, and then I just hope that I can just seize that day, whatever that might mean. That's probably why I get a little bit overextended, and I'm sure many of you do too, with that same philosophy. But nevertheless, thank you so much. Is there another one in here? Oh my gosh, you guys are making my Sunday morning. We have another new member. Thank you so much. AC Freeman, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I want to make sure, you know, in the past, I think sometimes I talk so much about the cases because they're so important and I get on a roll, and I really do not give the accolade and the attention to each of you that I should. And I really, really do always want to do that. But back to the Nancy Guthrie case and Porch Guy and what has happened in this investigation. When you look at this political position of Sheriff Nanos, he is a far, far left Democratic position. And when I say far, far left, I just mean he is I shouldn't say far, far left. I don't mean it like that. I don't mean it radical. I just meant of the candidates available to run, he is on the left of all those candidates. My gosh, this is a absolute record. Thank you. Thank you so much. I just want to say your name. Leftem, I like that, 66. Thank you so much for joining our channel. And because of this, there's a lot of opposition on the right, as you can imagine. I mean, just from a political, you know, and a philosophical standpoint, I know it to be a fact. I know it to be a fact that there are many of the people, of course, that started the vote against him, the no confidence vote that started the recall election. They're all obviously his opponents on the right. I say that just to say for knowledge base, because I wanted to know who started the recall vote. Well, I looked and it is a right candidate, that meaning right in terms of conservative as opposed to left, Democrat versus Republican. So I just like to have this knowledge. I just want to understand who begins all of these and ulterior motives. Now, having said that, you know, from the beginning, I think I've been one of the least critical of Nanos, trying to be empathetic to the situation he had going on, because anytime you're in charge of a large investigation, you certainly can be second guessed and that sort of thing. Having said that, this case, mark my words, is going to go down as one of the most ill-handled cases. I only wish that the cameras could have been turned on Delphi like this, because Delphi, in my opinion, is a travesty of justice, but we'll talk about that another time. But this case is following in sync with some of these same critical errors. In the Delphi case, they didn't bring in the Bureau till about a month later. And by then, I mean, the way that crime scene was handled by people who had never had a crime scene, nothing, no homicide case, it was a tragedy of epic proportions. That case. This case, there was crime scene there. They were there early. A homicide detective was put there early. I think we have to give both sides of the pancake, I call it. There's two sides to every pancake. And I know you guys know I make pancakes, on the weekday mornings for my son. Chocolate chip pancakes. He loves them. I know they're not good for him. I know they have a lot of sugar, but he loves them. And I tell you, at this stage of my life, being able to get up and make those for him is really important. I know that sounds weird. Just like when he was little, when I retired when he was six. So I was able to walk him every single morning to the bus stop and every single morning pick him up. And the weird thing is, my husband and I did that hand in hand. And I say that's weird because you might be thinking, geez, that's so much time and so much effort. When I look back, I'm so glad we did it. And I'm grateful for every chocolate chip pancake I make. But nevertheless, I want to talk about the pancake meaning. If you look, the one side is smooth. It looks good. It's the Aunt Jemima pancake that's just, you know, perfectly made and contoured. And then you look at the other side, it looks completely opposite. It has the holes in it from the grease and from the, you know, air going through. It's the weirdest thing to me how different two sides of a pancake look. And that's why I've always said throughout my career, always listen, everyone, there's two sides to every pancake. And a good investigator will always look at both sides of the pancake. So in this case, when you're looking at both sides of the pancake, there's a lot to consider. And with Sheriff Nanos, there's some to consider too. So I think it was good he brought his homicide detectives out there, you know, in other words, his most experienced detectives out there early, not early enough, but at least he got them out early. He called crime scene to do a crime scene investigation. We've got to give him that. But he didn't take the mat that the slobbering porch guy stood over, slobbering on that light he had in his mouth. He didn't take Nancy's car. They didn't take Nancy's camera. They didn't do a septic search. The Bureau went back and researched the location, which I think is also very significant that the FBI went back and did that. Why did the FBI do that? Because it wasn't done thoroughly enough. And then also, whenever the FBI comes in on the backside of an investigation, they're going to do everything over. But again, the FBI didn't take the car. The FBI didn't search the roof. The FBI didn't notice those cameras. They took them later, much later. And then they came back several days later again and did the septic search. That should all be one search. So I struggle with really understanding how these mistakes were made. I struggle as an investigator. I think I told the story, though. And the only reason why I did roof searches after that, so if you don't have these learning points, you can't know what you don't know. I always say my best cases were the cases that I made mistakes on because I could learn from each of those mistakes. You know, if I already know it, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to learn anything new. Thank you, AC Freeman, 2452. For joining the channel. We appreciate you. And we're going to talk about something special we're doing for members after this. But anyway, I think I shared with many of you that I had a case. It was a terrorism case. And we had a search warrant to search his car and to search the premises in the house. So while the agents were there doing that, I was in the house actually interviewing the individual. Normally, you want to take them. He didn't want to leave. I could not throw away this grand opportunity to talk to him because he was ready to talk. He signed my form, waiving all his rights. He said he wanted to talk to me freely, but he didn't want to go to the FBI office. Well, let me tell you, even though it's not optimum, you typically want to get people out of their comfort zone. In this case, it ended up being a good call. We sat on his couch, we talked, and he coughed up after probably an hour and a half conversation, all the goods, which was really, really critical and really, really good because where he kept all the indicia of his crime was on his roof in the rain gutters. Now, I just have to say this. In all the searches that I had been a part of prior to that, that I was the case agent on, so I'm the one writing up the plan, saying what needs to be searched, saying what items we could, all of that. I don't recall, other than maybe glancing up at the roof, you know, looking up at the roof if there was a peephole to look up, I don't remember ever having a full-on investigative search of the house, of the roof, of any of the houses. So that case came about 10 years into my career. And my career with the FBI was 25 years. So for 15 years after that, people who went out on searches with me, case agents that worked below me, when I was supervisor, in all those cases, I'm like, gotta look on the roof. Gotta look on the roof. Because I learned from that case. But if I didn't have that case, I wouldn't have known. So that's why I try not to be too critical, because, you know, they just didn't know to look. But up there on that roof were cameras. You know, I do remember seizing a lot of cameras, particularly in working organized crime cases and cartel cases, a lot of cameras even back in that day. But nevertheless, the Bureau and Pima County missed the cameras and had to go back and get them. They missed the septic and how they looked there. I have these photos. It just makes me sad. They should have pulled a septic truck in and sucked everything out so that they could make sure the perpetrator didn't throw something away that was used in the crime. In other words, I know they were likely looking for Nancy in the septic, but to me, they should have been looking at the whole entirety of the broad picture. What could have been used in that crime that they wanted to ditch and get rid of? I would have pumped it out. They were out there. It looked like a pool, you know, tool, like the brush or net or whatever that they're poking around in. I don't know. And that happened probably, I don't know, day 6, 7, 8, something like that. So, you know, why do I bring this up? This has all been on display for the world to see, for Porch Guy to see. The bad guys see this. And any lawyer who is going to want to take this case, and you can imagine the number of attorneys that are going to step up and want this case. Depending on who ends up being arrested, it would likely go to the federal public defender, but there's often private people that step in and they want these high profile cases because they want to make a name for themselves. So they do it pro bono. This is going to be one of those cases because there's just been so many errors made that are on display for everyone. And that's what I think about. And that's what all the homicide, when you hear from these homicide detectives, please listen closely. My friend Dale Lumberg, that I met during a homicide investigation where our cases collided. I mean, you know, it's interesting. Everybody's been talking about, and I'm going to divert off to this track, the issues between Pima County and the FBI and all of this. Look, I'm just going to consider myself blessed, I guess, because 15 years of my career, of the 25 years, I spent embedded with local departments, working side by side cases with them. I never, ever had one case, not one case in those situations where there was egos and a riff and I'm going to do this and you're not going to do this. And, you know, we blah, blah, blah. Now that's not to say you didn't discuss the case and one person might think that a fact pattern leads in this direction and you're leaning toward this direction and you have to work together to figure it out, or that you might have two different areas that you think one's more important than the other, and the other one might think something else. And then you say, all right, well, let's get the bodies we need. Here, you go follow that. I'll follow this. Let's meet back in the middle and see how that goes. It is stunning to me to hear all of this about the rifts. If they're true, it's very, very unusual. This is not Die Hard. This is not meet Special Agent Johnson, and I'm Special Agent Johnson, which, by the way, I love that show. It's so funny. Great acting. Love Die Hard. If you haven't seen it, go see it. If you like kind of those thrillers that, you know, kind of fun, but funny. Bruce Willis is so funny. Nevertheless, the bottom line is it's just not like that in the reality. And I didn't just work with one department, multiple departments, and not just me, agents that worked for me, agents that were assigned side by side with me, just smooth as butter. So I can't imagine, I literally can't imagine a case where the locals and the FBI are clashing. And can I tell you another reason why this exists typically? Typically, I'm going to tell you something funny, but typically these guys you work with, and it's usually the detectives. That's who you usually liaison with. So they've already worked their way up from the streets and they're now detectives like Dale Lundberg. They have a huge amount of respect for the Bureau. It's, you know, as an FBI agent through my career, to be able to, most of the time, and I'm not saying everywhere because I have a couple of hilarious examples, but I have many examples, some more funny than others, some not that funny. But the amount of respect that you typically get just walking in that squad room. Yes, they're hesitant of you. They wonder what your experience is. They wonder if you're really the real deal or if you're, you know, some lackey or, you know, what's going on. But I tell you what, the Bureau also, it's very important to them that they do not embarrass themselves with other agencies. So typically the agents that you see assigned to do the federal side on these task forces, and it works the opposite way too. The detectives that are assigned from these local agencies to these big federal task forces, they send their best of the best because that's what they want people to see. That's what they want that agency to be comfortable with them. And so there is a huge amount of respect both ways. I think the reason that the FBI is so well respected, typically in these venues I'm talking about, especially when I was working, look, let's just face it, after Comey, things really, really changed. I mean, you know, just the fact that one of our directors lied, lost his position. I know he regained his pension back through litigation, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to get into it because I hate politics. It's just saddened me to see, in some respects, what's happened to the Bureau. But nevertheless, typically these relationships are great at the level of the people working the case. And for those who don't know, if anybody thinks that Sheriff Nanos told Crime Scene to leave or Sheriff Nanos to go in this direction, he's a figurehead. He sits back behind his desk. And certainly on important decisions, he makes them. Oh, that's for sure true. Or anything that could make him look good or anything that, you know, he wants to get in front of something that could make him look bad. He's the figurehead. He's the person talking about it. And I think he makes a lot of calls. I don't think he's the sort that just sits back and lets things run. But I'm saying, as the detectives and the case agents out there, they are making the day-to-day big decisions that affect this case. They are the ones we have to look for to make sure things run smoothly out there, because they're making them with every drop of blood, with every interview done, with every canvas. We're counting on them, the line detectives and agents, to make sure this thing goes right. So I wanted to explain a little bit about, I wanted to just talk about both sides of those pancakes. And the fact that if there is riff and issues and everything amongst the troops, absolutely it can affect an investigation, because you're looking for everybody to have that mutual respect, for not to be worried about what's happening up above, any rifts that might be going on. So again, I just have to be honest, I haven't had personal knowledge with that, but I will share the story I was giggling about. So when I was an agent, obviously you're driving, at least for me, I was driving all the time in these big cities. This is a Dallas time. I was assigned to the Dallas office for 10 years. So I had just gone to Houston, driven down there. Hope you don't mind these little side things. I think it helps with, understanding the day in and day out. But anyway, I was down in Houston for a week for a gang conference. And what this gang conference, because I worked gangs, it's very important, I think. And it was run by the Texas Gang Association, multiple speakers, very good conference, a lot of liaison with all the other investigators, state, local, and federal working gang investigations. So the Bureau sent me down because I was kind of the main one working gangs at that time for Dallas. So I go to this conference and really good stuff, just everything from the importance of graffiti, what it means, how important it is if you can arrest a tagger, the language that is used, hand signals that are used, what they mean, the gangs that are up and coming, the gangs that exist, Tango Blast as an example that might exist in the federal or in the lockup system, but then when they're released, there's no affiliation on the streets. They can go back to their Bloods or Crips or Latin Kings, Satan's Disciples, whatever it might be. They can go back. Just all the information that we were able to, in a week's time, it was about a week long, as I recall, go back and forth and really learn, do case studies. Because when we can do case studies, we actually get to learn hindsight. That's how I teach my self-defense class, by the way. I do everything in hindsight. In other words, if you are working a case and you get to dissect that case. We do them, we call them after actions. So we do after actions to look at what went good, what went bad, what we can improve, and all of that. When you do all of that, you learn so much. So anyway, I digressed way too long on what we do at some of these conferences. But anyway, I'm driving back and it's probably, 5-6, and I'm about an 8-iron, no, maybe a 7-iron. Away from my house on this little street, 4 houses down or so. And I get pulled over by the local police department where I live. It's a little teeny tiny department. I get pulled over and I'm in my FBI car coming home from this conference. So the guy pulls me over and the first thing I tell them, because I've got a gun on me and I'm not in any uniform, is I hold up my badge and I say, "Hi, I'm with the FBI. I just want you to know this gun that you can clearly see right here. I'm not in uniform, but I'm on duty." And so the guy says, "License and registration." I say, "Okay, no problem." So I get out my license. And then I say, "Well, this is the thing on registration. We're federal. The FBI is self-insured. So I don't have like an Allstate or what? You don't have your registration?" No, sir. I'm so sorry. You see, and I tried to get something out of the glove compartment to show him, we're self-insured. He goes, no. I need the insurance. I'm like, okay, whatever you need to do, sir. So he gives me a ticket for going, whatever it was, 45 and a 35. He gives me a ticket for having no registration. And then I thought there was something else to do with the tag, but maybe it was just the registration. I can't remember. It's been so long ago. Anyway, couldn't believe it. I get my car. I don't say a word. Go home. And I end up going to court. Obviously, I'm going to fight this. I go to court and explain the situation to the judge. The officer's right there. And the judge says, "What? He cannot believe, the judge can't believe this happened." Of course, he throws everything out, no court costs. He admonishes in not a polite way the officer. And that is that not that I shouldn't have gotten the ticket because I was speeding. I was going about, I always, by the way, if everybody knows, you just can never go 11 miles over. Typically, what the rule is as long as you're within 10, you should be okay. Anything over that, you're probably going to get pulled over. But nevertheless, I think he thought it was so ridiculous, probably how the whole thing went down. He even threw away the ticket. So anyway, I'm not saying officers should get special treatment like that, but I am trying to point out that there are some local officers that are very ugly to federal law enforcement. There are some, like that case was just ugly. There was just no reason to be ugly. Fine, give me the ticket, but do your research on the other thing.
Spring is giving fresh start vibes. Like suddenly you want to open the windows, drink more water, and maybe act like you have your life together. But when dinner rolls around and you're this close to ordering takeout again, ButcherBox can help. They deliver premium, clean protein straight to your door. No antibiotics, no added hormones, no mystery ingredients. Just real food that actually fuels your body instead of slowing it down. Effortless glow-up energy. But make it dinner. For over a decade, ButcherBox has led the industry with meat and seafood that's antibiotic-free, hormone-free, and independently verified. Because when it comes to fueling your body, quality isn't extra. It's everything. Clean, whole protein means better support for strength, metabolism, and that steady, all-day energy we're all chasing. As an exclusive offer, new listeners can get their choice between chicken breast or top sirloin for a year, or ground beef for life. Plus $20 off when you go to butcherbox.com/pods. That's right. Your choice of chicken breast or top sirloin for a year or ground beef for life. Plus $20 off your first box and free shipping always. That's butcherbox.com/pods. Don't forget to use our link so they know that we sent you.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Anyway, I totally digressed on that to make my point. So nevertheless, to not digress, I want to get back on the case that I am concerned about this riff or issue. And I want to bring back up the case that I've talked about this. But Sheriff Nanos, for those of you who don't know, and I believe it was back in 2016, but it might have been after that. I had all those details. I did a show on it, but there were for approximately 5 years, he was under, Sheriff Nanos was under investigation for, might have been actually sooner. Anyway, he was under investigation. This is the point that's important, for about 5 years from the FBI for malfeasance. Basically, it concerned about $500,000 that was supposed to be used for things related to law enforcement and sheriff's work and blah, blah, blah. And instead it was diverted for personal use. That case came out to charge another individual within the department underneath Sheriff Nanos, and Sheriff Nanos was not charged. So I want to make that clear that he was not charged in that case. But from a lot of reporting, and as you can imagine, I think that in part, this could be the reason, the deeper seated reason for any animosity or rifts that might exist. It's just something that I think occurs to many of us, that if you go through something like that, you might not have the best flavor for the Bureau and their ability to come in, and now they're coming in. And basically he said in that press conference, he puts his head down, he turns his back and he walks away. He goes, they've got this, you know, they've got the kidnapping part. We're going to work the crime scene and the, you know, abduction part, but they've got the kidnapping piece, which I think what he meant by that was regarding those ransom notes, that the Bureau has had that from, you know, day four or so to run with that ransom piece of it, which now we know through Savannah Guthrie's interview, and I know I've seen a lot of different, this was the interview with Hoda, I've seen a lot of different, and I may clip this. Actually, if the team, if anybody from the team is on here, if you could please, I'll get with you, but I want to clip this piece where she talks about the ransom notes, because she's very specific. Says there are two, and these are the words she used. This is the adjective, or I'm sorry, the verb. I believe they are real. That's what she says about two of them when Hoda asks her. Now, kind of at the end of the conversation, she says, but, you know, I don't know. None of us really know. And it made me wonder if, you know, going from sort of the emotional, what we call spontaneous utterances, if she might have thought, I wonder if I should have said that. But the cat is done, out of the bag. Obviously, the NBC could have clipped it out. They did not want to clip that out because that is so compelling. That is the biggest reveal that we heard, way over the pajamas and the shoes, which that was a mistake. But this was a huge reveal. And I can just picture that press conference where Nanos literally ducks his head down, turns to the back and says, the FBI has that piece of it. Did you see that? Please go back. That's what I should have clipped off also. And I'll put it up here because it's so telling. He doesn't want to release any of that to the Bureau. He doesn't want to, but he has to because he understands that the Bureau has much more experience in the cyber realm and in the kidnapping realm than they had. The Pima County has never even had a kidnapping. Go look at their crime statistics. There's not even a column for it. So anyway, the bottom line is, do I think this rift exists? It sounds like it does. Is it problematic for the investigation? Absolutely. Is this making any defense counsel drool? Absolutely. So whenever somebody is caught, you can look, you think that there have been second guessers on the Idaho 4 case that are still out there espousing nonsense? That is bad. That is bad. It's still just cringy. But I know they're always the same accounts. They're the same accounts. And what they do is they go into cases and they try to foil whatever the conclusion was. They play devil advocate, but to the nth degree. And when I say to the nth degree, what they do that is just criminal in my mind is they harass, and I call it indicting. I said that, somebody said, well, nobody indicted them. I mean a verbal indictment. I'm using that word not in the formal sense, in the legal sense, but rather when you indict somebody of something, you accuse them of something. This is the bad part about what they do. It's not bad enough that they're putting the seed of doubt for somebody, like in that case, who's been convicted, who admitted to it, what they do, and the evidence is overwhelming. They blame others. They blame others. And that is the piece that in our system we cannot have. The witnesses in the Karen Reed case are being blamed for murder, a cop, ATF agent, a kid, although I think they've pulled back on the kid finally, a dog, you know, it's so absurd. But that's where you get into these problems. So can you imagine on this case, everyone? Can you imagine what is going to happen with this case? Oh my gosh, I can see it right now in the making, no matter who is arrested. Look, they're going to look at just all the people. And a lot of these people, as I said before, I have respect for some of them that are still cannot get off of Tommy and Annie murdering. That's what it says. I mean, in a lot of these shows, murdering Nancy Guthrie. Savannah being involved. Yeah, there are channels and social media. It's unbelievable to me. Even some of my former counterparts intimating, at the very least, if not saying, that they believe the family is involved. And do I understand that if I'm wrong on this, I'm going to eat some crow? Oh, I get it. I'm just very convinced it's not the family. All right, let me see. Metamorphins. Please look to the case of Vicki Barton in Ohio. We also don't know how family and neighbors felt about Nancy's TV appearance or her need to care. Yeah, let me look at that case. I'll have to, okay, I put that up here so I could all easily be able to find it. Let me get this up because I want to thank Debbie so much. Debbie Harmon, 896, for becoming a member of the channel. Thank you so much. I'm going to digress again just for a minute. As a member, just thank you so much. What we bring on this channel is you're going to get experienced individuals. Monday, we have coming on Mac. Again, this will be her, I believe, third or fourth show with us on Nancy Guthrie. I've had her on other cases because we disagreed about Delphi. I wanted to have her on. And I actually want to have on somebody who is in law enforcement that I respect. I can think of at least one person and have them on and tell me what's leading them down that path. And I really want to have a respectful, intelligent debate because I think from what I've seen, I can pretty much debunk or delude or, you know, show how that line of thinking seems off and what the facts are, information we have that would make that not a viable viewpoint. So I really want to have a law enforcement person on that has the opposite view so we can cuss and discuss that. And Mac and I did that on Delphi, and I thought it was a very useful case. If you want to go back, it's a live with Mac McCollum where we discussed Delphi. So if any of you followed that case or are interested in that case, and you'll get to see both sides. You'll get to see Mac's point of view. She believed that they got the right guy and the prosecution was right. I believe they did not. And that the guy was railroaded because of all the mistakes that happened in that case, which I, again, will say, and Mac didn't have this. I was privy from somebody who was actually out there on scene and reported it all to me. I don't like to do source reporting, as you guys have seen. If I get information from sources, I either don't repeat it, and I certainly don't repeat it and say sources. What I tried to do was get the person to come up. So I'm still working on that. But nevertheless, they came out and said these two ransom notes were legitimate, meaning Savannah. And why does she believe that? I believe she believes that because of the detailed information that only an abductor would know. So I think that that is a very critical piece of information, the most critical. And when you talk about how this case can be solved, I know people say the DNA, I think that that's a possibility, but there's a lot of problems. CC Moore's done a lot of information about that. Wednesday, we're going to have the grandmother of genetic genealogy on, who actually solved the first case through genetic genealogy. She's going to take us through that. And Colleen Fitzpatrick, doctor, is going to be on to talk to us about that. So well educated. She's great too. So we're going to talk to her. And that's Wednesday at 10. It's a later time because she's on East Coast time. And even though she was willing to come on at 8:30, I didn't want to have her have to get up that early. So we're going to do 10 on Wednesday. Tuesday, again, I'm hoping to have Schiff. Also this week, I'm hoping to have a search and rescue expert to talk about why in the hell aren't they still looking for her in the Sonora Desert, which I'm also going to touch on here. Man, there's so much to talk about, even though there might not be a new clue. There are some new clues. And for many people, you don't know everything, right? Many of us don't know every little in and out of this case, or we're able to watch it somewhat, but it's hard to know all of it. So I hope on this channel to rehash some things that either people might have never heard of or didn't know. And, you know, I'm glad to tell you where I get it from, because anything I have is directly from what the police have said, what the FBI has said, videos that I have seen, or substantial corroborated information. If it's a belief of mine, in other words, based on my training and experience and the facts out there, I will preface it by that. This is what I believe happened based on those facts. So that's what kind of channel we are. Thank you, Case File 365. I like that picture too. I love it when I wear the black with that amber color. I have an outfit just like that. I wear it when I go on News Nation a lot. I really like it. All right, Meta, thank you so much for becoming a member. I really appreciate you. Thank you. But nevertheless, this case, I guarantee the Bureau is pouring into, just like they did. Remember, it took them, let's see, they got involved on, I believe it was day three, so really day four up and working it. By day 10, so 6 days later, they had Porch Guy's video, right? They had a Porch Guy video and multiple photos. Any of these you see from me are directly from Cash Patel, from his, when he put that out. No, he didn't email me, or else that would have been hijacked by the Iranian hackers. I did have to make a joke about that because I just had to make a joke. In a sense, it's not funny, but I mean, really, the Iranian hackers are actually, let me put this up too. And again, thank you. Jeez, what are my mods doing that are getting, thank you for becoming a member, She3PO945. Thank you so much. It just means so much when you guys join. I think the memberships are between $199, $299, and $399. We have something extremely special for the $399 members that is going to happen the minute somebody's arrested, because I truly believe this case will be solved. But on day 10, the FBI came and they worked with Google. And even though there was nothing on the cloud per se, and there was nothing in the on a SIM card or anything like that, she didn't pay for a subscription. They were able to, as how I understand it and how it's been explained, is if you can imagine these gigantic computer terminals that have all this knowledge and information and videos and footage and audio and all this, and they were able to literally go through the layers of that computer data and get these images and everything. And that's why there's no timestamps or date stamps, which totally makes sense to me, because they were looking at the video and audio, which, as you all know, is far different from when you set your time settings on there. So that makes a lot of sense to me. So nevertheless, that is where we're at with that. They were able to do that. So the question is, they have had those ransom notes, and I should have had the exact date, but I think that they got them on day three, because that's when they brought in the Bureau full force. Now, I know Nano said that on Sunday the Bureau was there. In other words, the day it happened, and I don't know, there could have been a liaison person. I don't know. He might have probably made a call, perhaps. I don't know. But when they really got involved was in that press conference where you see the special agent in charge, Jordan, and he is there and they're addressing. And that is when he says in that video, as I've demonstrated, he drops his head, he turns, and he's like, the FBI has the ransom note part, has the, you know, and we're going to handle the abduction. So nevertheless, that is when I believe they at least kicked into high gear trying to figure out who sent those notes. Everybody. That is almost 2 months ago. And I can tell you that is a long time. For those of you who don't know, multiple ransom notes came into two local Tucson outlets. In those notes, so that's originally what happened. Those outlets sent everything to the Bureau, but did not come out publicly about them. This is critical. This is so important when we're thinking about motive here. So what did the ransom note folks do? They sent it 12 hours later to TMZ. Why would you ever do that? 12 hours later, you've already sent a note to the locals. The locals have forwarded it to the FBI. The FBI is then talking to the family about it. You've accomplished, 3 days later, by the way, your mission to get the note out there to try to get a ransom, purportedly. I still don't think that was the purpose of the notes. We'll talk about that. Thank you so much, Holly. We'll talk about that. Thanks again, Holly. Appreciate the membership. We'll talk about that. But listen, those two notes, they have been tracing this whole time. And I guarantee you, knowing how the Bureau works, it's not just the Bureau cyber people that are on this. They are going into all the possible organizations that professionally prevent this sort of thing, that are well learned, knowledgeable, understand how this works. In other words, how you can trace and break VPNs and to determine IP addresses and all these steps that they're taking behind the scenes. Thank you, Goldie Glocks. I love that, Goldie Glocks. Are you a gun enthusiast? Thank you for becoming a member. Maybe it's Goldie G Locks, so I shouldn't think that they're a gun enthusiast. Goldie Glocks, you got to tell us whether you're a gun enthusiast or whether whether G is like a middle name and you wanted it to be Goldilocks, but you put a G in there. I don't know. Anyway, let us know on this. So I'm sorry. Is somebody saying? Okay. So nevertheless, these notes that now, again, the biggest news we've had in the last several days, this is big news. It's the biggest news because this is how the case can be solved. These two notes. So you can bet the Bureau's known that. And the Bureau is fastidiously working with other experts from other companies and organizations who are the best of the best in peeling back the layers of the incoming port for the emails. These were emails that were received by two stations. And then 12 hours later, because this sadistic piece of crap people involved in this. And you people, we don't really think Porch Guy is the one behind the notes, right? There are more people involved. There's Porch Guy. So they left the doors open in the back for somebody. 150 pounds is so much to carry. I hate to keep digressing, but I'm going to digress really quick. In our SWAT tryouts and what we have to do on whenever we go to trainings, I think it's at least once a year, if not twice a year, we have to take the test again, the one that we have to take to be on the team. And it's a multifaceted test. First of all, tryouts lasted. I've tried out three different times for three different teams: Houston SWAT team, Dallas SWAT team, San Juan SWAT team. And actually, two times for the Houston SWAT team, once for the Dallas SWAT team, once for the San Juan SWAT team. And they were up to 3 days long. So the tryouts last forever. It's very grueling. But there are certain tryout measures you have to pass. So they do that first. If you can't even pass those, for instance, they put a 25-pound weight on you, you know, those big weights. They put a weight belt on you. They put a rope, and then they dangle the weight, and you have to do pull-ups with that weight on, dangling from you. Free hang pull-ups, so you start like this, and you do military-style pull-up. You can't kip, means you can't kick your feet out. You have to keep your feet perfectly straight, and you have to do this with the 25-pound weight. The minimum, I believe, was two or three. But to be competitive, I did eight. To be competitive, you really have to do way more than just two or three to do it. It's really, really hard. But again, I digress because I want to talk about what you have to do. You also have to do a body drag. So you have to run a quarter mile through some obstacles, and then you have to get to a body, and you can, as long as they are off the ground, you can do fireman's carry over your shoulder. You can pick them up. Long story short, but on my Dallas tryout, this was something. So you have two people that are sort of, in a sense, competing at each against each other, but it's not really that. It's about the time. The time competes with everybody you're trying out with, but they just put you in with another person to run with. And they put me in with this guy who actually, I really like him. I really like this guy. And what you end up doing is you run your quarter mile, and then the first one to get to the people, and we had a guy, I'll just give you his first name. His name was Matt. He weighed about 220. And then we had another guy that weighed about 165 that were laying there. And I think they did that very purposefully, right? They had hoped or thought that I would outrun him and get to the 165 first, and that I would take him, or that he, this guy, wouldn't take the 220 guy if he beat me. So we go through, and I'm ahead. Everything's going great. But remember, I was a runner. I mean, I was a runner all through high school. I had a college scholarship to run. So I'm a runner. But anyway, we go around, and I missed one of the obstacles. So we're going doing these weavings, and I guess I missed the obstacle. So they scream, "You missed the obstacle." So now I lose time because now I have to run back, go through that last obstacle and go. So I get to the two guys late. So he gets to them and he takes the 165 guy. And you have to take them 10 yards. And I get there. I'm like, "Oh no, Matt." And Matt's one of my best friends, was one of my best friends in the Bureau. He's a great guy. So I go, and I mean, 220. It was literally like an ant picking up those leaves you see. It was so funny. But I got him, and I got him up. And how I did it was I went down as low as I could and kind of below the crotch area almost, because you couldn't have the feet dragging. And then I just lifted up and backwards like this. So he's kind of back over like this, kind of over me. It was so ridiculous. It looked like I said, a leaf. And I will tell you that I think that is those moments and things like that. I think that's probably why I made the team on the first go around, made the team. He, this individual I competed against who was very good, he did not make the team. And I just believe that that was part of it, because they're not just looking for how strong you are, how fast you are. That's really important because you need these physical requirements, but they're also looking for team. You know, are you going to help the team? And even though we were actually competing against each other, and I really don't even blame him, I really like this guy. He tried out later, about a year later, and he made the team. And he later became, I think, even a team leader on the team. I like the guy. He didn't make it. And I definitely think that had something to do with it. But I digress. My point is that it is so hard, even for the most trained, for people who are out there preparing for something, who are doing 60 pull-ups a day and 100 sit-ups a day and running 7 miles a day at a 6 minute or less mile pace, that you're just pushing, pushing, pushing. And I'm not just talking about myself. I'm talking about SWATers, FBI SWAT people. To pick up 150 pounds, it is not easy. It's just not. And so do I think Porch Guy was trained, and do I think he did this all on his own? I just don't think so. I just don't think so. And I certainly think somebody with serious cyber background and knowledge was behind those ransom notes. Hidden VPN behind VPN behind VPN behind IP behind IP. I just don't understand, though, how they can't have solved this yet. I don't understand it, but I don't understand that. I am no IT expert. That was not my area of expertise at all. I always tease around. I'm a knuckle dragger. Did investigations and arrested people. never was the one behind the scenes doing the cyber. We had a whole cyber unit. We had cyber agents and cyber analysts that were so good at it. And you can bet they're all on this. The best of the best are on this, not only within the Bureau, but outside the Bureau, because this is something you would want to pull in the best minds possible to try to solve. And it's not been solved. And when you look at the purpose of those notes coming 3 days later, going to media, not going to the family, not really having any chance at all to be successful at getting money because you don't show Nancy alive or deceased. They even said, listen, we will take her deceased after they missed the deadline. Remember that they came out and they said, yes, yes, please show us proof of life. Basically, it's a really sad one. It's the one where all three of the Guthries are there, all three of the children. Annie, Cameron, Savannah, they're kind of reading from scripts. They're looking down. Cameron doesn't say anything. Only Annie and Savannah speaks. And nevertheless, when you look at that, and then right after that, remember, Cameron comes out all by himself, and he's very matter of fact. And he says, listen, show us proof of life and contact us. Give us a way to contact you. How can we embark on a negotiation for you to have 6 million? And somebody said, I said 6 billion. If I did, that was a mistake. I really thought the translation was 6 million Bitcoin, which is 66 million in US dollars. I'll go back and look at that. And if I misspoke, if you watch that episode and I misspoke, that I could have said billions accidentally. I didn't mean to. I was talking in millions. But nevertheless, that was the first one. I really do, Kelly McLennan. I really believe they will solve it. And I think it's going to take a while for these reasons. The number one avenue to solve it are these two ransom notes. Now that we know, and really, come on. We saw early on, we saw the special agent in charge, we saw them give these notes a lot of validation. They came forward, they had the family. And when I say validation, I want to make sure I'm clear. There's a big difference between believing these notes are tied to the people who took Nancy, which I believe now two of them are, and believing that the ransom notes were truly for ransom. I think they were for torture for this family. Torture, torture, torture. The question is it someone that is just out there who picked Nancy Guthrie because of information they had? And because they knew Savannah had money, and their whole intent initially was to get the money with the abduction, and then she passed away. And so after that, they had to completely retool, and they kept up the evilness by making them suffer through these notes. Man, I just have to say, if it ends up being that the second half occurred just to continue the suffering, I mean, you're just dealing with some really, really sick people. You guys, I have this whole list, but I think I'm going to save it in part for tomorrow to discuss with Mac. I want to thank another member, D Bonham 2427. Thank you so much for joining the channel. I want to get out there a couple of things. So I'm going to save a lot of, I mean, I have a long list. I have a list of like 8 other items. We only got to the ransom note items, which was the most important thing I wanted to bring up in this case, again, to reiterate it. I know a lot of people may argue, well, she says she believes it and blah, blah, blah. But then later she says, but none of us really know. Again, I think that was kind of like a, maybe I better caveat this. I think that's what she believes. She says that those are straight out of her mouth. I believe the two notes are real. I personally believe, based on what the SAC did, based on what we heard from TMZ about what was in those notes, based on the public plea that was put together, orchestrated by the family, then the second one by Cameron, and then later, there's five total, and then the third one where Savannah Guthrie specifically says, you know, basically she knows that she's no longer with us, but we'll pay for the body. That's what she says. And then there's no proof of body. So, of course, that begs the question, did they ever have her who wrote these notes? Or do they know they have pushed the envelope? And remember, the last thing these people want is to get caught. But one of the first things these people want, they want recognition, notoriety. Can you imagine the high whoever has done this is getting right now? The high of controlling another human when they took her. And by the way, I don't think the cane was taken. I'm searching for where I read the cane was not taken, because I know that was said early on. I don't think that cane, they didn't take her medicine. They didn't take what she needed to survive. She didn't need her cane. Anyway, no, I don't think the cane was taken. But that's a whole nother conversation. I'm going to talk about Mac with that tomorrow. But back to this. The notes are critical. Whoever took her has absolutely no empathy for her. They could care less what happened to her. And they are in a total high of being able to control somebody, like a rapist gets a high. This guy or people are getting a high out of the absolute sheer torture they're putting the family through. And we've never known that more. All you have to do is look at the notes that came days later and the torture that that further put the family through. And the guilt. What axe does this person have to grind? What is feeding them? Is it like, and I keep saying I'm going to bring up this case and I haven't done it yet, is it like these networks of people that get such a high out of exploiting those that have missing? They get a huge high out of it, and that's what they do. They exploit them. They pretend to be them. They record their voices. They send pictures of them, and they just absolutely love torturing people. Is it that? Is it that one of those kinds of groups? And these people are so savvy when it comes to hiding behind VPNs and different IP addresses. They are computer absolute geniuses in the IT world. And I think someone involved in this is that for those two notes. And then now to tie that into the kidnapping, people. So the question is it targeted toward Nancy for whatever reason, her political views? Is it targeted against Savannah for her notoriety? Thank you, Jamie Williams. I actually grew up in Kansas with someone named Jamie Williams, but that is not you. That is not her. Because that was a him. Is that the case here, everyone? Is that the case, that this is a network and they're organized and they targeted her for money? She dies, and then they just love to continue that torture because that's what feeds them, this notoriety? Or is it really, like Mac thinks, much more personal, that this is directly targeted at Savannah and Nancy and the Guthrie family? Directly targeted at them to make them suffer and keep suffering. And they love the headlines. And every day this is discussed, and every note and every tear she cries, I bet they are getting off so much on that interview. All right, let me read this. Crypto plumber number one. Samson might have meant $6 million in Bitcoin. Only around 20 million Bitcoin exists, and the largest single holder has about 500,000 Bitcoin. The current price of Bitcoin is around 66,500. Thank you, Crypto Plumber. You know, I was trying, so I met with a finance expert, not about anything personal or any other reason, but somebody that my husband is known for 30 plus years. I met with him yesterday, and but he's an accountant. He traces money. I was hoping, I really want to get somebody on that is a crypto expert, a Bitcoin expert, to really understand. I mean, all I understand is you can see it publicly as long as you have the address. I understand that you can not trace it. In other words, once it goes, it's gone. That person can take it and it's gone. That's what I believe. But I need to get a crypto expert on here. Crypto Plumber One, please DM me. If it seems like you know a lot, please DM me if you work in this realm, if you would ever want to go public, and your bio and everything for me to take a look at if you do have any interest. I really want to get a crypto person on here, a real expert about this. So they meant 6 million is what you're saying, that was really what was sought. I need to go look back and do a dive into that. And when it first all happened, I knew those numbers up and down. And then since then I've slept, I guess. And I can't, you know, the exact numbers I'm not sure about. I thought it was 6 million Bitcoin, but that could be wrong. All right. Let me see. I want to talk about something on the channel now. So I'm completely switching. And again, we'll be back on Nancy tomorrow. I'm completely switching to talk about this. And this is something that the mods have been working on. And I absolutely love this. This is for members. And I'm sure we have Jay talking about all of this, hopefully. But let me look it up because I want to make sure I say this right. Oops. So sorry. I can't announce it yet. I'm going to announce it later. It's a special thing for members. So they're working on it in the background. It's really kind of cool. It's an interaction. I'll just say that. But nevertheless, I got it because I wanted to check my last message. They're not ready. The mods are not ready for us yet, for me to announce that yet. So sorry, I almost prematurely announced that. We have an announcement. It's going to be something special for the members. I'll circle back with that. Maybe it'll be tomorrow, the next day, that is all worked out. But as soon as we get it worked out from the technological standpoint, I have that announcement to make. As far as anybody who is a $3.99 member, and again, it's $3.99 a month, so nothing that would break the bank. I wasn't going to be one of those channels that you have to pay for this and you have to pay for that. But I try to do something special for the members because it means a lot to me that you're invested in the channel in this way. And so the minute that someone is arrested, which I really do believe it will happen, I said within 6 months, we'll see if I'm wrong, 6 months of the FBI getting involved, we're at almost month two. So we'll see. But as soon as there's arrest made, I've got this little package of FBI stuff. It's just what I've collected. So, you know, look for a coin, a patch, a pen, and maybe a couple other things in just a little package that we'll make sure to set up and get your address. And we will be sending that to you. I've done that before on X with just one item. I think I sent it to six different people. I would ask different questions on X sometimes, and it was about nothing even important. Sometimes I would show a picture of something that I found that I never knew existed, and I would ask, does anybody know what this is? Please don't Google it. And the first one that came back with the answer, and usually it was a very, I could tell they didn't Google it because they lived in that area or they had very specific reason why they knew about it. And anyway, I sent out pins then for those situations, but this is going to be something bigger than that. Because I think it's really important to give back to those who care about your channel and follow your channel. Thank you, Jen B. Wow, you are beautiful. Look at Jen B's picture. Oh, Jamie Williams, thank you. Again, thank you so much. Debbie Harmon, 896, thank you so much. Again, thank you for everybody who got a membership. I really appreciate it. There are videos on there that nobody else can see. Sometimes I preview them just there that nobody else can see. And I'm going to, and then we have a new thing coming out that I just can't announce yet because it's not quite done. Nevertheless, we're going to continue to try to bring you good information, information from real professionals, those with a lot of knowledge and expertise. No, they might not be on CNN or Fox because they actually have been doing the job and are still working or just never wanted to get in the public eye. But for my classmate, as you guys heard that story, I think it was 2 days ago I told it, but for Steve Gomez, I would not be sitting here. So he got me into this. Let's see, a couple new members. Oh, that's Jen Best again. Thank you again. I can't forget that beautiful picture. Carpe Diem, 1503. Thank you. That's the one I missed. Sorry, I want to give recognition. Eileen Sadowski. Thank you so much, everybody. Everyone, that's it. We're going to shut it down. Tomorrow we'll be back. I've still got my list of like 9 other things I wanted to bring out, but we're way over our hour time. I always hate keeping you all past an hour. I appreciate your time and your interest in the Nancy Guthrie case. Remember, Porch Guy, his face also could solve this case as they're working the other side. Porch Guy, his face, his mannerisms, where he shopped, what he liked to wear. He's also a huge key. Listen, these people thought they did their research, likely knew she didn't have a subscription, knew that if they pulled that camera off, it would be very difficult to get imagery. But you know what? The FBI and the Google experts did it. We have to pray that the FBI and private industry experts get down to the bottom of who sent those two ransom notes. It's the big, big part of this. That will solve the case. Till next time, may justice be served for Nancy Guthrie and for all the missing.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Feel your best and amplify your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.